Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to episode 29 of Absolutely Intercultural, the podcast that deals with intercultural matters. The motto of this show is lifelong learning, and we have prepared a couple of exciting and interesting interviews for you. Thank you for tuning in again, and we really hope you'll enjoy the show. If you do, then why not go to our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com and let us know what you liked, or maybe what you didn't like, what we could do better in the future, and what subjects you would like us to discuss on Absolutely Intercultural. As you could see, Irene Hansen got in touch with us through the blog and suggested to do a show about different religions. Now, we got in touch with her, and she'll help us put together a show in June, where we will also feature the Protestant Church Day in Cologne. We're always happy about feedback and suggestions.
By the way, as a result of the fact that we have won the first prize in the EduBlog Awards, I have been invited to a panel about the future of EduCasts at the Podcast Day 2007 on June 19 in Cologne. I'm really flattered by the invitation and I'm looking forward to the discussion. And of course it would be great if you could come to the Podcast Day in Cologne too. It's going to be an exciting event in the framework of a huge media conference, and you can of course find more information about this on our blog. So I hope to see you there.
Well, lifelong learning is often promoted by institutions of adult education. So for our first column, Absolutely Grown Up, I went to Stockholm in Sweden to interview Ulla and Beate, who work for adult education institutions. Ulla works for the Folkuniversitetet in Sweden and Beate for Deutscher Volkshochschulverband in Germany. We try to figure out whether there's a specific culture of adult education and what makes people want to carry on learning throughout their lives. For our second column, Absolutely Personal, I went to the north of Sweden to meet my longtime friend and colleague in many European projects, Pat Shrimpton, who went from England to Sweden 41 years ago with her husband Neville. She also started her career at the Volksuniversitetet, but later on became a teacher at the University of Umeå in the north of Sweden. She talks about how the field of adult education has changed in all those years and why she won't move back to England after her retirement this summer.
And for our third column, Absolutely on Fire, Laurent went to a conference on language learning in Berlin, where he interviewed the chief fire officer of Aachen in Germany, Dieter Nüssler, and his wife Helga, who won the European language label for their project Multicom 112. The emergency call number for all European countries is 112 to make sure that wherever you are in Europe, you can call for help. But what if the operator at the other end does not understand you? The project develops modern tools for language training, which enable control room operators to improve their foreign language skills at the workplace. And last but not least, we are proud to present a new column, Absolutely Lifelong, where we will share good ideas to organize your own lifelong learning. Today's contribution has been produced by Anne Knopf and Gerion Reuter, two of our students here at the Rhein-Ahr Campus. They will give you some good advice on how you can improve your English in a realistic way and have a lot of fun at the same time. But let's now start with our first column, Absolutely Grown Up, where we try to find out if there is such a culture as a culture of adult education.
Some people think so. I mean, if you think of the participants, I don't think so. They don't feel that they belong to any special culture, but if you think of the organizers and teachers and animators, so maybe.
Well, one could actually argue that lots of things in adult education originate from the Nordic or Scandinavian countries. It's no coincidence, I think, that the European program for adult education is actually named after Grundtvig, the Danish sort of father of adult education. And somehow I would completely agree with Ulla in saying that most of the participants probably don't realize that there is some kind of a mutual understanding underlying all of adult education, because they sometimes just come to learn, I don't know, anything from English or computing or yoga to whatever. But people who are active in adult education seem to sort of have the same background. I was, funnily enough, I was asked yesterday if I'd been with the Boy Scouts or the Brownies or whatever. And I find that quite a number of people in adult education actually started like that. Funnily enough, yes, I was with Deutsche Pfadfinderschaft bei St. Georg, even though it was only for a couple of years. But there seems to be this, you know, community feeling that you do something with people and you like to do things together and you're motivated to spend your time with others.
Do we look different from others? I don't know. But one of my colleagues in another Swedish association, we were going to meet a group of other people from other, because we are 10 different. And I met this one whom I know, and have you seen the others? No, but look there, down the street. There's a group. They look very funny. Must be them. And not very elegant, and, you know, and a bit odd, and didn't know exactly where they were, and so on. Right. Well, must be our colleagues.
So what would you say the fashion style is of these people? Sort of comfortable clothes? Sort of no nonsense? Or what is it?
Well, comfortable, yeah, well, this is all a stereotype. I mean, it's a bit of a joke, but I think you could actually argue that natural materials, people will always wear linen and, you know, natural colors and natural dresses, wide and comfortable, nothing very artificial, nothing that's easily inflammable.
Vegetarian shoes, maybe? Okay. Now, how would you say the values are reflected there? Do you think that this is because these people have similar values?
I'm not sure, but something, maybe, probably we have something in common. Because in Sweden, I mean, we're not bound by curricula decided by the state. We are free to adapt courses and studies to the needs of the participants, and so it's more creative in a way. And you can do new things more easily, and you'd have to wait for decision from above.
Right. What are you particularly proud of when you've done something good during the day? Which are the things that make you like yourselves in the evenings? I mean, there are those moments. There are plenty of moments where we think, oh my God, I wish I hadn't been there in that meeting. But what are the moments in your day when you're pretty happy that you're working for adult education?
People, I mean, everything we're saying here is a generalization, but I find that people tend to be very grateful. For some reason, I'm just thinking, I had a meeting last week with a colleague who hasn't been in the job for longer than 6 months now. And he said, he had organized a conference, and he said he'd done many things like that before, but this was the first time that he'd actually got positive feedback. 6 people had actually written to him and thanked him for the conference and saying how much they'd enjoyed it. And that, of course, is, I mean, what more can you ask for in work?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if that kind of situation occurs, that's, of course, very, very good. But you feel that now. Oh, I did something which was appreciated by others, and I got feedback and so on. I mean, for us who work with administrative and organizational work, you never hear anything as long as everything works well. But if it doesn't, then you get it back as criticism. But if you organize a conference or something like that, when you meet people, living people around you, I mean, you get immediate feedback.
Mm. I think what's really rewarding in adult education is that you meet people who, out of their own free will, want to learn something. They are motivated. They want to go out and not stick to the same old paths that they've always had. And that's really nice.
In our second column, Absolutely Personal, you will hear another expert on adult education. Pat Shrimpton has been working in that field for more than 41 years now. First at the Volksuniversität and later at the university. But what made her go to Sweden in the first place? Well, let's listen in.
Well, When we first came to Sweden, and in fact until about 10 years ago, every language department in Swedish universities had to employ a certain percentage of native speakers.
Oh, okay.
So that, to improve the quality of the spoken language, I expect, within the university system.
Mm-hmm.
So when my husband and I, we finished university and we finished our teacher training and we got married and we didn't know what to do, really. But we didn't really think we wanted to teach in an English school, at least not straight away. And we saw a job advertised in Sweden teaching adults. And part of the job was that they would train you in teaching English as a foreign language, because in those days there was no recognised university course or anything, not like it is now when there's lots of places where you can do a diploma, I think, in TEFL or TESOL.
Mm-hmm.
So they train you and then you would work, they would send you somewhere in Sweden. We didn't know where we were going, they were just going to send us somewhere. And then you would have evening classes for adults and some classes in schools. So we started off like that, and we taught every level from beginners up to conversational English, which was a very good training in
and
teaching.
So at the beginning this was not here at the university?
No, not at all. It was part of an organisation called Folk Universitet, which is the People's University, which specialised in courses, not just language courses, but things like weaving and craft and all that sort of thing for ordinary people. But it had some sort of tenuous link with the universities. I'm not quite sure how, but it was linked in some way.
And have you always stayed here since then? Since the first time? You never went back?
No, never went back. Well, we go back, you know, for holidays and things, but we never went back to England because our original contracts were for 2 years. And then when those 2 years were up, we were thinking of going to Germany, in fact, to do the same thing for a similar organisation. But then my husband was offered a job at the university as one of these teachers who were native speakers. So he took that job and I stayed with the other organisation for another year. And then it was the period in Swedish universities when they were expanding enormously. So at the end of that, his first year, they asked me if I'd like to work here as well, so I got a job here too. But our jobs were a bit different from an ordinary job because we were tied to Umeå. You know, we couldn't apply for this job at another university. We would have had to have gone back to England and then applied from there. And we actually had contracts from the king at that stage.
Okay. So, directly signed by the king.
Oh,
right. Okay. And every 2 years you got a new signature from the king.
No, it was for life. So then they changed the whole system. We're not appointed by the king now, but...
Okay, so this was how long ago?
Well, we first came to Sweden, it was 41 years ago.
Now, you told me that you are going to retire in about a year's time. So then it's back to England? Whereabouts in England?
No, I don't think so. We're not really sure what we're going to do when we retire, but we have a flat in England, in Leeds, which we can use when we want to. And we have our house here. And then our son has just bought a big house down in the very south of Sweden, as far south of Stockholm as we are north now. That's about 1,300 kilometres away. So we think we might move down there for a bit. So I'm not sure we could go back to England, actually. And when you've lived abroad for a long time, I think it's difficult to go back because the place that you're going back to is not the place that you left.
So what are the things when you go back to Leeds, for example, what are the things in daily life where you say, oh gosh, yes, that reminds me of my childhood? I'll give you an example. I always find it striking when in England I'm on a bus and people get off the bus and they say thank you to the driver, for example, which is not something that we do in Germany. Are there little things that you notice now after so many years when you go back to England?
Well, I think people talk to each other more in places like queues or standing at the bus stop or when you buy something, not in a supermarket usually, but I mean in an ordinary shop, you have a conversation about it. And I think you're polite in Sweden, but you don't have a conversation over buying a loaf of bread. So that's quite nice. I quite like that, to be able to do that.
Now close your eyes and imagine the following situation. You've just started a new job in a foreign country, somewhere in Europe. Well, let's say Lithuania. At work, you probably mainly speak English, and you haven't really mastered the Lithuanian language yet. One night, you wake up and discover that your house is on fire. You rush to the telephone, dial the emergency number 112, and suddenly you realize that the operator at the other end might not understand you. Now, this is where Dieter Nüssler and his wife Helga come in. They've won the European language label for a project that tackles exactly this problem.
The problem was that we have an emergency call number, the unique European emergency call number 112, mm-hmm. and it was stated that these calls should be handled in an appropriate manner. And to handle that in an appropriate manner means you have to speak foreign languages. So, and the reality was that there was no training available within the standard training programs of our firefighters. And this was the reason why we thought about just to give some support with IT tools.
So how do I picture this? So these people were sitting there, maybe they had a little bit of time where they could do some language work, and you came up with a concept of how these people could be trained?
Yes, we had a partner from the University of Cologne. They had special ideas how it would be possible.
We start with the situation of the colleagues. So they are used to work with IT support in the control room. So the idea is just to introduce in their normal machines IT tools where they could use the language learning in the intermediate phases when there's no urgent call, for example. So the ideal solution would be that they will use this tool in the working situation and take it back, the motivation, and take the CD home.
Now, for people who don't work in your field, can you tell us what is the value of this? Can you give a specific situation, maybe a call that comes in?
So normally the operators will answer, here's the Notruf 112 Aachen. And the caller will say, socorro, socorro, un accidente. And then we have the problem just to identify first the language and to identify what is the problem. So this is the main aim, just to identify the language and just to say, okay, we have a colleague, he will understand you.
And what can go wrong if people haven't had your training?
Yeah, okay, the people which are calling us in an emergency situation, they have a different style of speaking, they have... stress, they are nervous and
yeah,
so on. Yeah. They tend to not to use the most proper language, but their slang because of their situation. And it's our training just to that our operators can direct this dialogue towards simple questions so that they can extract from the message the most important things. Mm-hmm. What has happened? Where is the accident? How many people are hurt, and so on. So this is the idea, just they are capable to direct a dialogue. Just put people back from their motivation level and then say, okay, we are about to help you.
Where are you with the project now? Have you just started? Are you in the middle? Have you already finished it?
Finished.
Oh, it is
the
finished.
The first project is finished. That means we have the CD with to learn the vocabulary and the dialogues. We have it. And now we are in the situation that we have a second project with other languages. And a lot of people are starting this CD.
I'm quite happy that we won this award. And so our result is, and this is the most important thing, a lot of colleagues using our CD are beginning to learn the language, mm-hmm. the full language, and not only the part for the business. Therefore, we introduced also nice things, how to order beer in the restaurant and so on, so
right.
that they have a personal value. And this is, I think, the most motivating result we had, that they really start to learn language and to introduce it in their normal behavior, in their normal life. And that is, therefore, I say we have a very good result.
Thank you very much for being here. And again, congratulations.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
And if you'd like to know more about that project, you will find a link to the website in our show notes. Are you looking for realistic ways to improve your English and have some fun at the same time? Well, then this will strike a chord with you. Anne Knopf and Gerion Reuter, two of our students at the Rhein-Ahr campus, have come up with some great ideas, and we are very proud to present them here on our podcast. So the stage is all yours.
Welcome everybody to our new English improvement column here on Absolutely Intercultural. Our names are Anne and Gereon, and this is our first contribution to a podcast.
Today we'd like to present you a wonderful way to improve your English and have fun at the same time. That means we've discovered a method that is not as boring as learning vocabulary lists.
Yes, that's true. Maybe you've asked yourself before, how could I improve my English in my free time, or driving my car, ironing, jogging, or even in the bathtub?
There are many ways to train yourself, but which one of them is useful, real, and matches your preferences? Which one is fun and effective too? There are many sources providing you with excellent materials, but how can I find the right one for me?
Maybe you'll find the best way to improve your English in this episode. Just try out today's proposal. What can go wrong? Your English will definitely improve.
We all like to listen to English-speaking music. Some prefer country music, others rock, others love pop music or the charts. But all of them have in common that there are lyrics that mean texts. So why don't you use these lyrics to learn vocabularies and sayings?
To get a translation of any song, just Google the words lyrics and add any song name you are interested in. You'll get more than enough results. Once you have found your song, you can read the translated lyrics and recall the English words. Next time you are listening to that song, you will hear the English-speaking singer and remember the translation. That's the way the English words and the translation will be linked in your brain.
In Germany, we have a famous radio station, which offers this special service to its listeners. Professional speakers interpret foreign language songs while they speak their passages of the original composition. All in all, it sounds like a tale with instrumental music in the background.
All translated interpretations are played in the radio program and afterwards offered on the internet. Today, there are more than 1,000 songs listed, and even an excellent web radio with a permanently changing program. Next to the latest charts, there are rock classics as well as unknown songs with great lyrics. Because of that, it will never become boring to listen to this web radio. So this is a method for lifelong learning. That means you start it now and keep doing it for the rest of your life. Your word pool will definitely expand and you will become more familiar with English sayings. We've tried it out. It really works and it's great.
Maybe you will find a comparable podcast like the German one in your region. We've placed a link to the German radio program on our website. Thank you for listening to our first contribution here on Absolutely Intercultural. We hope you enjoyed it.
Start improving now.
Wow. Thank you very much, Anne and Gereon, for your first contribution to the podcast. Maybe you have inspired some of our listeners to do something similar, and maybe they can share their ideas with us on the blog. It would certainly be a fantastic addition to our new column on lifelong learning.
So what do you think about this, or about our other columns today? Well, why don't you go to our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com and share your thoughts with us and your fellow listeners. Absolutely Intercultural is all about sharing and starting discussions, so we are always looking forward to your feedback.
Our next show will be coming to you from Denmark on the 4th of May. So long.
Stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tverkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.